A very warm welcome to Midori House, our house, with me, Robert Bound. For the next hour, we'll be taking a look at what goes into the making of Monocle, as we check in with our correspondents around the world. We're heading to Berlin to witness diplomacy in bricks and mortar. We'll be off to San Francisco to talk about an outpost of opportunity in Huntsville, Alabama. All that coming up next on Midori House. But first, let's get the news headlines from around the world with Nick Kelly.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Nick Kelly. Rescue teams continue their search for survivors after a 7.2 magnitude earthquake hit eastern Turkey yesterday. At least 264 people have been confirmed dead, but it's feared that up to 1,000 could have lost their lives. Aid groups have set up camps to help the homeless, and food is being distributed as part of a major relief operation. A decision on forming Libya's next interim government is expected in about 2 weeks, the head of its National Transitional Council said today. Mustafa Abdul Jalil said the council would discuss next week who would lead the new government, replacing Mahmoud Jabril, who stepped down at the weekend. Libyan officials have said the body of Muammar Gaddafi would no longer be kept on public view, and guards shut the gates at the cold storage container where it had been displayed since the fallen leader was killed 4 days ago. Tunisian moderate Islamist party Ennahda has said that results posted at polling stations after elections on Sunday showed it was the top vote-getter, receiving over 30% of the voters counted so far. Campaign manager Abdelhamid Jelazi said at a press conference, the first confirmed results show that Ennahda has obtained first place nationally and in most districts. The United States has pulled its ambassador out of Syria because of what it said were credible threats to his safety after his public support for protesters led to attacks on his embassy and diplomatic convoy by supporters of President Bashar al-Assad. Robert Ford left as a crackdown on protests and a nascent armed insurgency intensified despite Western condemnation. The British Prime Minister is fighting to avoid what could be the biggest rebellion of his leadership today. At least 70 of David Cameron's Conservative MPs are threatening to defy him by voting in favour of a referendum on Britain's future in the EU. Speaking in Parliament, Mr Cameron voiced his opposition.
Stopping the passage of further powers to the EU, it is not the right time at this moment of economic crisis to launch legislation that includes an in-out referendum. When your neighbour's house is on fire, your first impulse should be to help them to put out the flames, not least to stop the flames reaching your own house. This is not the time.
James Murdoch, heir apparent to his father's News Corp before a phone hacking scandal engulfed the firm, will return for a second hearing before the UK Parliament to explain apparent discrepancies in his evidence. James, youngest son of Rupert Murdoch, will appear before the Culture and Media Committee to answer further questions on November the 10th. A spokeswoman for News Corp said he was happy to do so. An Iranian-American man who US officials say has links to Iran's security forces pleaded not guilty in federal court today to plotting to kill the Saudi ambassador to Washington in a bomb attack. Mansour Arabsiar, who was arrested on September the 29th in New York, faces several charges, including conspiracy to murder a foreign official, conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, and conspiracy to commit an act of terrorism. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Well, thanks, Nick. Now we're going to go and cast an eye over the global weather with Thomas Schaffernacker.
The weather. In association with Kuoni Travel.
Well, it's a new working week in Europe and a new set of weather patterns heading our way. It'll look and feel very different to the fabulous weather we've just had at the weekend. In the next 24 to 48 hours, many countries in Western and Southern Europe are in for some rain. And among the wettest countries will be the UK, unsurprisingly, France, Spain, and then Germany and Switzerland. In fact, the West and Central Mediterranean will also see a lot of cloud, rain and possibly some thunderstorms from the Balearics to Monaco to Italy. So it sounds a little bit like doom and gloom, but there'll be some sunshine too. Here's the Business Centre forecast for Monday into Tuesday and London. Rain Monday night, so then it'll be a mix of rain and sun on Tuesday, 17 degrees, so not cold. Brussels, rain early on Tuesday, then some afternoon sunshine, 16 degrees. Berlin, fair weather at 13, and Zurich will be prepared for rain on Tuesday too, around 10 degrees here. And as far as the air travel is concerned at the airports, it doesn't really look like the poor weather has much potential for any sort of disruption to air travel, at least at the surface early in the week. However, if you're on a transatlantic flight, some mid-air turbulence is on the cards, a pretty strong crosswinds through many thousands of feet from a jet stream blowing at around about 100 knots or 180 kilometres an hour. Also, big turbulent clouds along the weather front. So that's flying out of, say, London Heathrow to the US and Canada, for example. And across the pond we go to North America then, and here's what's happening early in the week. And we have some very warm weather on the way, unseasonably warm in fact, across the southern states to the Atlantic seaboard. Around the Great Lakes, however, and into Canada, much cooler with some rain Monday and Tuesday. And the business centres for Monday and Tuesday, New York City, both days looking sunny with temperatures of around 18 degrees, DC becoming very, very warm at 22, and Chicago, Monday sunshine will give way to a wet Tuesday, still around 18 degrees, so not cold, and at LAX, 20 Celsius and tons of sun all week there in Los Angeles. Airports and air travel. The weather for air travel this week across the United States is looking fairly quiet. However, from around about mid to late week onwards, there could well be some stormy weather in some of the eastern states. So Chicago, O'Hare into JFK, those are the sort of airports to watch. Quickly over to the Far East now. There's been a lot of cloud and rain over Japan recently. The weather is set to improve in the coming days. So Tokyo on Tuesday, 23 degrees with some sunshine. Osaka also 21 degrees and sunny too. Quick look at Australia. Sydney, you might get some rain on Tuesday, so get the umbrellas ready. 22 Celsius in Sydney on Tuesday. And that's the weather. I'm meteorologist Thomas Schaffernacker here on Monocle 24.
Están escuchando Monocle 24.
Da Propa Jalabert, Monocle 24.
Essa é a Monocle 24.
Monocle 24, this.
Dette Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Det her Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
Before that toothsome promo, you heard Thomas Schaffernacker with the weather. I'm joined by another regular. I was going to call you a member of staff, but now you've spoiled it because everyone can tell by your laugh.
I'm the employer, actually. I'm more than staff.
This is, I'm joined in the studio by Tyler Brulé, who's come essentially in to talk two things. To promo his show coming up later this evening.
Yes.
At 1000 hours London time, the Monocle Daily. And to talk us through a few Asia Pacific and Australasian news stories.
Because that's our beat on the daily.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
We're the show that straddles the world.
We can say...
Do you like that?
It depends sort of, it depends how dry you are.
Yes, exactly.
It depends what the weather's like.
It does.
You don't want to get a storm game between
you. I don't think any news or current affairs program has the show that straddles the world.
The show that...
It's got authority, right?
Who do you think would be the sponsor? Let's not get into that.
No, definitely not.
we can say... Good morning, LA. We can say good afternoon, London. We can say good evening, Europe. We can say thanks for staying up with us, Asia Pacific.
Absolutely.
And we've got some news stories, although it seems like there are some good news stories as well. Asia is seeing signs of recovery, despite Europe kind of dragging its heels and arguing with each other.
Well, there's two interesting stories. If you look at what Japan today is leading with, that Japan's exports grew in September for a second straight month, saying that it's reflecting the nation's gradual recovery from, the earthquake in March, and that exports rose 2.4%. So that means many people in Japan are waking up to good news. Funny story in the Australian, though. Prime Minister Julia Gillard will today appeal for support from Commonwealth nations to heap pressure on Europe to tackle the debt crisis.
What do you think that looks like? Well,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that tackle looks like. But second of all, like, they're not doing anything already. Do you think this is like a great wake up call from Canberra?
Yeah, exactly. By the way, what is that? How do you think that works? Is it an email with where you put the importance as high and it gets a red exclamation mark?
I think it's the highest priority,
yeah,
if possible.
Hi, this is Julia. Wonder whether you could... It seems like... Do you want to borrow a tenner?
And by the way, I'm going to see you in Cannes, so you better pull up your socks by then.
Yes, I know. I like that. It's they're not having the meeting. Where would they have the meeting? They're not having the meeting in Canberra. They're not having the meeting in Nairobi.
Well, I hope they know that because it says can. I hope someone got the memo right. Anyway, so it's good that Julia's on the case with that. But an interesting story that's been sort of cropping up for the last sort of 24 hours or so some discussion, potentially documents that Qantas is going to outsource all of its ground staff, denials from the Qantas side about that. But then another story about one of their spin-off carriers. They've got this low-cost brand, mm-hmm. Jetstar Pacific, looking for some type of reshuffle. And Jetstar Pacific is a joint venture out of Vietnam. And if what we've seen right now, which, you know, in many ways, this is, of course, you know, the big season for the kangaroo routes down from Europe to Australia. And there's a massive rethink going on in Australia right now as to what they should do with their carriers. So a lot of discussion about what's the future of Qantas right now. Then also Qantas announcing that they're going to set up this new premium carrier. We don't know where it's going to be based, but it's going to be a new premium carrier in Asia. So this will obviously be the other end of the spectrum, what they've done with Jetstar. So there's a lot to watch from there right now.
But why is that? Why are they having to rethink? Are they flying around with not enough people on board, or are not enough people paying enough at the front of the plane? What's the
Kangaroo's lost his spring, hasn't he?
I know. Despite the fact he's lost his, he's had a Joey.
He has
in the form of a spin-off brand, but yeah. he's got a slightly sore paw.
Yeah, I think so. I think a bit of a crook in the tail as well.
Really?
Yeah.
But that's how we like them.
Definitely. Sorry. No. So he needs. I don't know. He needs to. What would a premium animal be? Because I think that you have to think, if you're an Australian brand, that, you know, kangaroo is a bit everyman. What's a bit upmarket?
What a kookaburra? Or is that a bit
kookaburra?
It's quite a handsome bird.
It is a handsome bird. Is an emu premium?
I don't know. What about a cassowary bird?
Oh, those are quite dangerous.
They're very dangerous. But yeah. At least no one would mess
They'd
with you.
Kick the hell out of you. Anyway, there needs to be a big rethink at Qantas. I think very much they have to really consider, you know, do they want to be in the game as a global flag carrier? How much are they flying the Australian brand? You know, how Australian do they sound? And what does it mean if they're going to jump into the Asian airspace properly, in a premium capacity? Because there are obviously some very limber contenders up there.
There's a pretty busy sky in Asia, right?
And
I suppose there's only one. Although Australia is a huge landmass to that part of the world, there's only one carrier that anyone can name from there.
Pretty much.
Is that a problem, though? Is that a problem? And do people want to fly on something that is Australian, that is defined as Australian? We know it's the oldest airline in the world, isn't it? But is it important that it's Australian?
Well, I always feel better that you got Bruce up at the controls.
That's quite good, isn't it?
It is.
I used to be in flying doctors.
Yeah, no, I like when Bruce is flying the plane. I do.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you.
Anyway, so that's I think that's a story to watch. I think definitely over the next 2 months, there's going to be a little bit more clarity as to what Qantas is going to do with their carriers. We'll see also what happens with the own brand. There's a lot of discussion that, you know, does Qantas actually become just a holding company, and that Qantas as the main brand goes away, and there's just a bunch of affiliate airlines, and you know, that's a potential scenario as well, I guess.
There's a lot of Joeys.
It's a lot of Joeys, and not maybe not a lot of emus.
We're not spoiling your show, are we, by talking about
Absolutely
this?
Absolutely not. No, God. I'm not.
You've
gonna,
got more. You've got
I'm
more,
just giving you the
you're
scraps.
Keeping your powder dry.
Very much so.
I'm just kidding. Well, thanks for giving us the straps.
Join about my show tonight.
I said
not
straps.
Really.
Yes, please. What's coming up?
Tonight we're going to be talking about rebranding the Maghreb. We've got Jonathan McClory on tonight. What do you do when you're Libya? Mm. You've declared that, of course, the former leader is well and truly gone, and it's time for a new day. But what are the games that you're going to play? Hopefully nice games. So we're going to be talking to him. Also, we're going to be talking about how food can rebrand a neighborhood, and we're going to be going in and around Borough Market. We really stretched the travel budget there this evening.
And is that tube or taxi?
I'm not sure, actually. I'll see when the expenses come through at the end of the month.
Number 23 bus.
And anyway, what a nice song or two this evening.
Oh, good. Well, I saw you brought some in. Is that for now?
I did know. Yeah, these are for later. I'm not going to give them away because I don't want you to pinch them for your show.
That's off-putting, though. You're kind of like flicking through them, and I'm thinking, well, maybe we should play that.
Yeah,
maybe
we should have a bit of that. No, actually, this is for tomorrow morning's show. I'm actually giving up. This is hops. No, it's not hop. It's leapfrogging to the next day. That's what we're doing.
I like it. Yeah. I think, personally, you need a musical.
You need a big red if you're going to do a big leapfrog.
You did. That's how we straddle the world here.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us.
Exactly.
How do you solve a problem like the Maghreb? I think Libya needs a musical.
It does.
That would be all right, wouldn't it?
It would be very good.
Show that there's a soft side, a soft underbelly.
I'm going to suggest that to Mr. McClory this evening.
To the ex-dictatorship.
Yeah, I'm going to leave you here, Big Red.
All right, I'm going to preview what we've got coming up. We're going to head to Berlin. We're going to speak to our Berlin correspondent, Marcus Albers, and we also have someone from the Finnish embassy, part of the Nordic embassy.
In your little sauna here.
In my little sauna. I've turned up the heat.
I know. I'll turn it up as I go. I'll crank it up the dial a little bit.
Thank you very much, Tyler.
Thanks, Rob. See you later.
We'll see you later in the evening. You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. We'll be back in a second. Here at Monocle, we're always interested in the art of diplomacy. And when we heard about an embassy in Berlin where five nations share one home, we dispatched our Berlin correspondent, Marcus Albers, to check it out. His article features in the current edition of Monocle. We also have a lovely photo essay narrated by a lovely design editor, Hugo MacDonald, which can be viewed on monocle.com. Have a little listen here.
In the middle of Berlin's diplomatic quarter sits an embassy that has become a favourite with locals since it opened in 1999. Many consider it the most stunning of the new embassies since Berlin took over as Germany's capital. What's unique about this building is not only its architecture, but the fact that it's an embassy that represents five rather than just one country. The Nordic Embassy is home to the ambassadors of Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and Iceland. It's a shared embassy, a concept that exists only here in Berlin. After the reunification of Germany, foreign diplomats relocated from Bonn to Berlin. And all of a sudden, most countries needed to find or build new embassies. As the Nordic nations often cooperate politically, the idea of sharing an embassy has often been considered. Now, for the first time, they took the bold step and built one together in Berlin. The first challenge was the allocation of space and budget. The Nordic nations found a Solomonic solution, with the larger countries paying the same amount and only small Iceland paying less. Next up, the five countries chose national architects to design their respective buildings. The Danes boast an open glass facade, Finland uses slats of larch wood, and Sweden imported Gotland limestone. The facade of the Icelandic building is made of red rhyolite, and a 15-metre-high, 120-ton old granite plate is mounted on the Norwegian building. The shared event space perhaps best reflects the diplomatic union of the collective embassy. Called Felleshus, which literally means shared house, it conveys the open and transparent mindset of this shared embassy open to Berliners. The philosophy behind this is that public diplomacy is invaluable in today's disenfranchised world. The open building in Berlin is a tangible way to enhance the five nations' brands. In the Nordic embassy, Swedish beer is served, while Arne Jacobsen chairs grace the Felleshus. By working together and cooperating closely on-site, these five Nordic nations are making their countries a little bit bigger than they actually are. A diplomatic success mission, if ever there was one.
That was our designer, Hugo MacDonald, proving he knows three things. One, architecture. Two, how to do a beautiful script. And three, how to play grade 9 harp. You can view the full slideshow on monocle.com, but with us now to talk about this communal embassy is Essi Kalima, cultural coordinator for the Finnish embassy, one of the five Nordic countries sharing diplomatic real estate in Berlin. Essi, hi there.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, thanks very much for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure, thank you.
This kind of shared Nordic embassy sounds wonderful, but it sounds a bit like a flat share. Do you all have to write your name on the milk in the fridge?
Well, not quite that in that way. We do it in a sort of a common Nordic platform or framework, but for each for our own individual goals. So individually, but still together.
And it's obviously a laudable project, but I wonder whether the brand of each nation gets slightly blurred when you all sit together.
That's always the question we've been confronted. I think it's a true win-win setting for each of us. Of course, every now and then we end up also competing with each other, but in the end, we all definitely profit from this setting of having a Nordic platform unique one in the whole world.
And in terms of the building itself, how easy was that to agree on the different sort of elements of architecture and furniture that make up the physical structure?
We've been always really flexible about that, negotiating and agreeing on things, so this has never been an issue itself. So I think the cooperation between the five countries has always been functioning really well.
And is this a kind of new idea in terms of forgetting about sort of national boundaries and kind of arguments and really being able to sit down together? Is there a lot of socialising amongst the nations? And I suppose there's an essence of equality. Is it shared around, you know, the water cooler and the dining table?
Well, of course, the classical kind of diplomacy still is something that each country does it for itself, following its own goals and issues. I mean, I don't see anything changing in that. But on the other hand, we do a lot of things together. So there's a lot of potential for this kind of cooperation between countries, definitely.
And this is obviously based in Berlin, this kind of first idea of a shared Nordic embassy. Why was Berlin chosen first?
Well, I think there's a tradition. I mean, before the war, there was already the embassy of Finland and embassy of Sweden on that space, the same area. And that was kind of the core for this idea to try to combine all the five there.
And where would it possibly not work then? If it works in Berlin, where would be more tricky territories, or where are important territories that you have to have your own kind of flag in the ground?
I think this could be a working model everywhere. I mean, that is not the problem, because these diplomatic issues are still something for each country individually, more or less. So. But I think today none of us could have this kind of platform or shared space alone. So in that sense, that's really a cost-effective way to achieve bonus visibility, extra visibility for our cause.
And is it very much about, cost, or is it about making sort of diplomacy this shared thing? Diplomacy presumably should be something that you can do with your neighbours before you can do it the other side of the world. Is that the general idea as well?
It's both, definitely. It's cost-effective visibility, but at the same time, we have like a strong tradition of having connections between the five Nordic countries. We have a common representation of interest in the Nordic Council since 1952, plus we have Nordic Council ministers since 1971, so we do share certain core values, definitely, and certain working methods together. So that's definitely a starting point for this house.
And just finally, you're the cultural coordinator for the Finnish embassy, the Finnish part. Is culture increasingly a sort of important role in countries' sort of soft power? Is it putting on plays? Is it staging art exhibitions? Is that where a lot of diplomacy can be done in a kind of subtle and friendly way?
I would like to see it that way. And definitely Germany, German-speaking area, is one of the really important, interesting areas for us, at least for Finland at the moment. So this offers lots of new possibilities for diplomacy as well.
All right, Essie, thank you very much for joining us on the line from Berlin.
Thank you.
You're listening to Midori House with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We're back in a moment.
From the end of October, you'll be able to download Monocle's first app, featuring our Monocle 24 radio player, daily monocolumn feed, and our global 25/25 City Guide series. With its unique timeshift device to spool through programmes, you can either listen live or catch up on anything you might have missed via our archive. The Monocle app, available from the end of October via iTunes, is brought to you in association with Rolex.
Every month, Monocle deploys over 70 writers and photographers to over 50 countries to deliver our print edition. Covering a unique mix of global affairs, business, culture and design, Monocle publishes 10 magazine editions a year and 2 special newspapers during the summer and winter holiday seasons. With a subscription to Monocle, you'll not only be the first to receive the magazine, You'll also be invited to special events and receive our iconic tote bag from Rutote of Japan. Subscribe to Monocle from £80 sterling at our website at shop.monocle.com/subscriptions. Subscribe to Monocle and keep an eye on the world.
You're with Midori House and you're listening to Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound. Now we're heading straight back to Berlin. On the phone line, we've got Marcus Albers, who's going to give us a little bit more of a general feel for what's going on in the city. Hi there, Marcus.
Hello, Rob. Good evening.
Good evening. I wanted to ask you a little bit about that story you wrote in the current issue of Monocle on the Nordic Embassy. It seems like a wonderful, wonderfully clean Scandinavian idea of making sort of diplomacy public, and it seems like a bit of a kumbaya. How do you think it worked in practice when you were there?
Well, I think actually it's a terrific story indeed, because as far as I know, it's the only example worldwide where five countries do share an embassy. And I think it could be a blueprint for other countries because it's working really well in terms of the public, because Berliners just love this embassy. They just go there on a regular basis. There are exhibitions, there are plays, there are film screenings, and yeah, people just attend those.
Yeah, I asked Essie about the kind of cultural idea, the cultural backbone of the embassy, or the embassies as they are, and she said obviously that was increasingly important. Is that what you see? Do people use it as a kind of cultural centre? Do people use it as a regular kind of part of the city nightlife and cultural life?
Well, at least this is what the Danish ambassador told me. He said this is a tool for soft power, you might call it, or nation branding if you want, or maybe just public relations. It's just a PR tool to bring Scandinavia to people in Germany, and they do it really, really well. I mean, on a very popular level. They even did a show on IKEA, for example, I attended. And this is something people go to because it's popular. And they also, they have a really, really well-attended summer party with hot dogs and talks and, you know, Swedish beer. So people do go there.
And I saw on the slideshow that we have up on the website, I saw a couple that had just got married that were being photographed outside one of the walls of the embassy itself. Is it popular for that sort of thing as well? Just people just want to sort of rock up in a taxi and get their shot taken?
I don't know. This is the first time I heard about that. But honestly, I mean, usually if you talk about an embassy, this is a place you would never go to, except if you need a visa or something. I mean, I never go to any embassies, and people don't. And usually they would think this is a place where, you know, some people would do secret stuff they don't really know about. But the Nordic embassies is very much different. It's a public space, and you can even enter it without a lot of security, because usually if you do enter the actual embassy buildings in the Nordic embassy, there is security, of course. But if you go to this public space, it's called the Felleshus, where the exhibitions take place and you know, the film screenings, etc. It feels more like a restaurant, or it feels like a, you know, like an art gallery maybe. And I think that's a really good idea.
Okay, well, we're going to keep it with restaurants and art galleries, Marcus. We're going to head outside the confines of the embassy. What else is floating your boat in Berlin at the moment? What else is happening on the cultural scene?
Well, I mean, Berlin, it's always changing so much. I mean, just when you thought that the city was becoming more mature and probably finished, then all the building starts again. So apart from the culture, I think the most important things going on in Berlin right now is investments in infrastructure. I mean, they are building a new tram line to the central station, which is a good thing. They are building a new airport, actually, which is about time.
And we love the old one as well. We love to be able to rock up to Tegel and have a beer sort of like 5 minutes before our plane as well, don't we?
Exactly what everyone is in Berlin is saying. I mean, everybody loves Tegel.
It's
such a great airport, and you know, the distances are so short. You can just take a cab to the gate. But on the other hand, obviously, it is so expensive to run this airport. This is what the people from the airport told me. So it's just not feasible anymore. So yeah, they are building a large, really huge new airport to be opened in the summer next year. And the other thing is that everybody is talking about Berlin being the startup capital of Europe. There are so many new companies, entrepreneurs coming to Berlin, and they're actually running companies that people talk about, like SoundCloud or, you know, Amen, stuff like that. So it's a pretty startup feeling around here.
Okay, Marcus. Well, thank you very much. We're gonna keep you on the line and head to the news. I think you've also got a nice new shiny pop song from Berlin to play us after that as well. You're listening to the Midori House here on Monocle 24, and here with the headlines is Nick Kelly.
Thanks, Rob. Rescue teams continue their search for survivors after a 7.2 magnitude earthquake hit eastern Turkey yesterday. At least 279 people have been confirmed dead. More than 1,300 have been injured. A decision on forming Libya's next interim government is expected in about 2 weeks, the head of its National Transitional Council said today. News just in, Tunisia's leading secularist party has conceded defeat after unofficial tallies from an election at the weekend showed a victory for the Islamist party Ennahda. The United States has pulled its ambassador out of Syria because of what it said were credible threats to his safety after his public support for protesters led to attacks on his embassy and diplomatic convoy by supporters of President Bashar al-Assad. The British Prime Minister is fighting to avoid what could be the biggest rebellion of his leadership today. At least 70 of David Cameron's Conservative MPs are threatening to defy him by voting in favour of a referendum on Britain's future in the EU. An Iranian-American man who US officials say has links to Iran's security forces pleaded not guilty in federal court today to plotting to kill the Saudi ambassador to Washington in a bomb attack. US and North Korean negotiators made useful presentations today, a US special envoy said at the start of a two-day meeting, the second such encounter since six-party talks on nuclear disarmament collapsed more than 2 years ago. And three Czech tourists face up to 30 years in prison in Zambia if convicted of espionage after taking pictures near military installations in the southern African country. Those are the latest stories here on Monocle 24.
Notice that I called it the Midori House because there is only one of them, Nick Kelly.
Of course.
Of course.
The one and only. And the one and only Rob.
And you're back with it. And with him. Coming up next in the show, after we leave Berlin, we're going to head to San Francisco, or to Alabama via San Francisco, to speak to Alistair G about his outpost of opportunity called Rocket City. But we're going to get back over to Marcus briefly. Hi again, Marcus.
Hi, Rob.
Thank you for hanging on there while we had the news headlines. You were talking about a SoundCloud before. What have you got in your own personal SoundCloud for us?
Well, actually, there are so many new bands in Berlin these days, but I think there's one that's particularly interesting. The band is called Boy, which is a pretty misleading name because it's actually two girls. And I learned that they met in a seminar for pop music, in a course for popular music, which does sound a little cheesy maybe, but the music is great. And the drummer from Phoenix, this French band Phoenix, is playing on their record. So it's pretty cool. And it's, if it was still summer, I would say this is great summer music.
They're rocking the German charts. That's Little Numbers by Boy. I think I agree with Marcus Albers. I love it when you think it's a boy and it turns out to be two girls. You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. I'm Robert Bound. We'll be back in a second.
Every month, the Monocle shop unveils a new collection of collaborations available on monocle.com and in our shops in London, New York, Hong Kong, Beijing, Tokyo, and Osaka. This month sees a range of new bags added to our collection from Porter of Japan, a new blazer from London-based designer Oliver Spencer, as well as our regular lineup of stationery, CDs, posters, and books. Pop into our shops or visit us online at shop.monocle.com.
From the end of October, you'll be able to download Monocle's first app, featuring our Monocle 24 radio player, daily monocolumn feed, and our global 2525 City Guide series. With its unique timeshift device to spool through programmes, you can either listen live or catch up on anything you might have missed via our archive. The Monocle app, available from the end of October via iTunes, is brought to you in association with Rolex.
You're back with Midori House. Now, Rocket City isn't the capital of a 1950s sci-fi dream, but the slang name for Huntsville, Alabama, the down-home town with a high-tech secret. On the line from San Francisco to discuss a story he wrote in this month's Monocle is Alistair G. Alistair, thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Rob.
How are you over there?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. Recovering from last week's earthquake.
Okay. Well, I'm glad.
Very minor one.
Exactly, a very minor one. You're just doing up your shoelaces again.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can you shed a little bit of light on Rocket City or Huntsville, Alabama, as it's known? What does it look like? It seems like it's a center for sort of rocket making and weapons making and the defense industry. What's a stroll around the town like?
Well, it has a very charming sort of downtown core. It has lots of antebellum homes, so pre-Civil War homes. It was largely spared the destruction that was wreaked on much of the South. And so there are sort of these very charming colonnaded houses. But then if you go outside the center, you know, there are rockets sort of by the highway in a massive museum by the highway. There's a massive research park, the second in the United States, actually, where, you know, there are just sort of high-tech institutes and gleaming laboratories. So it's a real juxtaposition, you know, there's this very old South, and it feels like the very old South, and then this sort of super high-tech Silicon Valley-esque landscape around the outside.
And is there a sort of secret history to it? Is there something that links the sometimes questionable history of the South with the big defense companies?
No, I mean, the reason the defense companies are there, actually, there is some... some questionable history, but nothing to do with race relations. It's to do with the Second World War, actually. So after when the Nazis were in the process of being defeated, a couple of rocket scientists from Germany surrendered to the United States, and they were taken to America. They were first brought to Texas, and then they were taken to Huntsville, Alabama. And one scientist in particular called Werner von Braun, he designed the V-2 rockets, and so he was brought to Huntsville to work on NASA's space program, and so the rockets that he designed took America into space.
And in terms of the economy of a town like this, is it booming at the moment, or is it in the doldrums, or is it having to make friends with different people? Is it a healthy place?
Yeah, it is a healthy place. I mean, it's by no means in the doldrums, although like most other places around the world, it did suffer during this financial crisis, but you know, it has a relatively robust economy, in part thanks to the massive amount of federal investment that it receives. So it gets annually $120 billion federal dollars, which mostly goes to various Army and NASA commands that are located in Huntsville. So you know, that's fairly stable, that investment. And in fact, there was a recent nationwide Army-based realignment in the United States. So a couple of commands, particularly valuable commands in terms of investment, were recently brought to Huntsville as well.
And military hardware companies presumably attract a lot of boffins and a lot of very clever people. Is it a sort of strange place to sort of, are the bars full of the most sort of difficult and highfalutin pub quizzes in the South?
Well, not that I noticed, but there is definitely. I mean, it's regarded as one of the geekiest cities in the United States, and that's in terms of the number of PhDs per thousand head of population, and also with regards to the number of people who are involved in science and technology occupations. So with regards to that last metric, I think it's one of the, you know, top three or top five cities in the States. So for a very small place, it has a very, very large, smart population, and so you know, you'll go to put houses in the backwoods, and people will be, you know, building rockets in their backyard and making rocket-powered bikes and scooters. So there is a real boffin element there.
And it sounds like, yeah, so it sounds like there's a sort of shed culture or a kind of a basement culture or a yard culture here, where people are tinkering about with things and souping things up and launching things into the sky. Did you see anything like that when you were down there?
Well, actually, yeah, we were invited to, a rocket scientist invited us to what he calls his man cave. And a man cave is basically a place where a man can go and do manly things. And so he actually has a family home and he lives there with his family, but he's rented a separate house about a mile and a half away from his family home. And he's just filled it with these crazy madcap projects. So he's got lots of NASA memorabilia, because, you know, he's a big rocket scientist, but he also builds rockets there. And so he's working on, on various projects. So he showed us, he built these two suitcase rockets. So they're basically stationary rocket engines that are in suitcases. So you can carry the suitcase around and demonstrate it to, you know, people. And so, you know, he set it up, he hooked it up to tanks in his backyard. We all put on ear mufflers and, you know, we were firing off rockets in his backyard. So it was a surprising end to the trip, but a very good one.
And with all this kind of, these kind of high explosives and liquid nitrogen hanging around in people's backyards, is it an extremely safe place because it's one of the homes of the defence industry, or is it the most kind of crazy dangerous places you've ever been to?
It's not crazy and dangerous. No, I mean, I have heard, I mean, there have been explosions that I've heard on the main military base there, but it's not a regular occurrence. It's fairly safe. And, you know, with all these defence and NASA contracts, they have to go to the nth degree to ensure that any humans involved are safe. So, even at the university, which we visited, where the students are studying at a propulsion research lab, even then, you know, to get experiments set up to fire a single rocket, it can take hours because they have to go through such extensive checklists. So it's actually, you know, it's not an edgy, crazy place in that sense.
All right. And we know about the Boeings and sort of Lockheed Martins of this world, and they have bases there. But how international is it? Are there British, European, Asian companies and employees based there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of foreign defense firms, like BAE Systems is there. You know, consumer electronics firms like LG from South Korea. So I think companies sense that this is a good place to be because of the scientific expertise that's on the ground. And you even have firms like we bumped into a Canadian pyrotechnic firm that makes stage fireworks for people like Jennifer Lopez, and they're there for various historical reasons, but they like being there, they told me, because there are just so many scientists around that if they're trying to work with a new material, they can just go to someone on the army base and say, hey, you know, is this going to explode if we mix it with this, and what do we do with this? So, you know, there's a real sense that people are drawn there by the scientific expertise.
So you didn't leave Huntsville with anything powdery and dangerous in your pockets. I'm talking gunpowder here, Alistair G.
Unfortunately not. There was lots. I mean, actually, that's the funny thing. There's lots of cotton around. I mean, it's a big Huntsville is a big cotton. Used to be a big cotton industry. So there's this weird juxtaposition of all these laboratories and then cotton fields by the sides of these laboratories.
It sounds like I'm in a David Lynch film here or something. It sounds
very
surreal.
Bizarre. And then you go to the Space Museum and you can buy, you know, astronaut food and sort of, you know, ice cream sandwiches that astronauts would eat in space. It's a real unusual place in that sense.
So, well, luckily that's the only stuff you took back to San Francisco with you.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, it's space cookies and cotton.
Possibly better off that way, although it doesn't make great eating. Anyway, Alistair, thank you very much for joining us. We'll speak to you soon.
All right, thanks, Rob.
Thanks. Bye. You're with Midori House here on Monocle 24. We're back in a second.
For a concise and sharply edited overview of the best clips, quotes and quips of the week, tune into The Curator every Sunday right here on Monocle 24. Hosted by a different guest editor every edition, The Curator will point you to all the programmes you might have missed and is also the perfect digest to the week in world affairs, business, culture and design. The Curator, in association with Rolex, right here on Monocle 24.
For listeners in Tokyo or visitors to Japan, you can now enjoy a coffee, a Wilson dry ginger ale, or our classic curry at our first ever Monocle Cafe and shop at the new Hankyu Men's Department Store, just steps from Ginza and the lobby of the peninsula. Featuring a Monocle shop stocked with our ever-expanding collection of special collaborations, the Monocle Cafe is the perfect place to refuel after a run around the Imperial Palace or a busy day in Marunouchi. For more details, visit monocle.com.
You're back with Midori House here on Monocle 24. I'm Robert Bound, and without much fanfare or even any sort of introduction, Carol Colm has come into the studio, our Lebanese correspondent. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Hi.
Live and in person.
Yeah, I'm still in London.
Tap the mic to make sure they know it's live. There we go. See, that's terribly unprofessional, but it's true. It's fine. We're getting they're shaking their heads through the glass. Well, first of all, we have to address the slightly more serious elements of the region and Libya and how Lebanon is looking at Libya and what the papers are saying. Maybe you could give us a little taster of that, Carol, before we move on to pastures more musical.
All right, I'll try and be a bit serious. Well, I mean, the Lebanese are very happy for the Libyans. One thing is the Lebanese were not allowed to go to Libya because there was this big fight because some imam was killed in the 80s. And the Lebanese always accused the Libyans of doing it. And because of that, relations were broken. So no Lebanese could go to Libya. Now this is going to change. So we can all go visit the Roman ruins in Libya. Other than that, the Lebanese are just thinking about Syria and how Syria is going to be next, Bashar al-Assad. And that's just the, more or less, that's the big focus for the Lebanese. It's now that the Libya issue is more or less resolved, maybe foreign powers can look at Syria. That said, the people in Syria don't want a Libyan scenario. They don't want any foreigners meddling. And the opposition as well, obviously Assad, no one wants foreigners.
And is it a time for sort of judgment in the press, in the Lebanese press, or is it a time for trying to make friends and influence people in Libya?
I don't think, the countries are not that close, frankly, so there's not much of word that people hate at Monaco reaching out towards the Libyans. I mean, the press covered a lot the death of the Saudi defense minister, and that was more front page, I'd say, than the Libyan liberation of Saturday.
And there was a lot of talk about how Gaddafi was disposed of and how publicly he was disposed of. Is that something that the Lebanese press had a go at as well? Was that something that was criticized, or was it more just a kind of, well, this is good news, this is good for us all, we can move on from here?
I think everyone was just thinking of Bashar al-Assad.
Right.
That's the focus. That's the idée fixe for the Lebanese. Okay.
That's where the rockets are trained.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's shocking, but we've seen everything. We've seen Mubarak in a hospital bed in prison. Mm. So people are starting to get used to these images.
And is there any, I know that, as you said, the countries aren't too close. We maybe make the mistake of thinking that they are sometimes. But was there any general feeling other than it being on the news? We know that the Middle East and the region as a whole is news addicted and news hungry. Presumably it must have been one of the first talking points anyway in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, obviously the whole Arab Spring, but again, I mean, the Lebanese are just looking at their backyard there, and they're looking at Syria and what's going to happen next there.
All right, well, I can see that you want to segue neatly into a song now, don't you? I can see. It's true. What did you bring in with you today, by the way? We're gonna play a song. We're going to chat a bit more afterwards. But what's the first one?
So I brought Mashroa Leila, which is this group of young, trendy Lebanese who all studied at the American University of Beirut. They were all graphic designers and architects, and they were doing this night course or some course about music and sound. And they turned out to make a group, and they've come out with, this is their second album. They're hugely popular. Old people, young people, everyone likes them. And they're just really cool. They mix a lot of different influences, sounds. You'll like them. I hope you'll like them.
That was El Ha Romansi by Mashroa Leila, handpicked by our Beirut correspondent, Carol Corm. Carol Corm's with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Rob.
That was lovely. I can see why that would attract all sort of dancers, groovers, finger clickers, foot tappers, young and old.
Yeah, everyone likes it. I love it.
I love a yearning fiddle.
Yeah, there is a bit of a yearning fiddle.
That's, it's a musical
trendy
instrument, by the way, not a move.
Yeah.
Honestly. And you've got something else in your stack.
Yeah, I brought something completely different. It's from the latest Lebanese movie, which we wrote about a couple months ago. Where Do We Go Now? It's this Lebanese movie by Nadine Labaki. It was shown here at the British London Film Festival. Mm-hmm. There was a standing ovation, I heard. It's a great movie, and this is one of the songs from the movie. The story is about these women who try to stop their husbands, sons, fathers of going back to war. And this particular song is when the women are trying to make hashish cakes to try and pacify their the male people, the men in the village, and not to start fighting again. So they're making the hashish cakes, and they have these Ukrainian prostitutes who come and help them. And so then you're going to hear a bit of Ukrainian in the song. It's a fun song.
That sounds nuts. Take it away.
Hashish
featuring Ukrainian prostitutes, a cry for everyone to eat a hash cake, hashish albi.
Who's hash that cake, that's it. That's
Who's
it.
That by the way?
Oh, it's the filmmaker's husband is a songwriter, and he did it with this woman called Tanya Saleh, and they're quite cool, they're quite talented.
Yeah, they seem off the wall, they seem good.
Yeah, it's very good.
All right, Carol, that's kind of all we've got time for, unfortunately. We'll have to come in with a few more CDs from you.
Anytime.
Indeed. I hope that reflected the international kind of mix we have here on Monocle 24. And that was Midori House with me, Robert Bound. Coming up later, it's on at 1900 hours in London time. It's a culture show with me. And then later this evening at 1000 hours, Tyler Brulet and Aisha Spears will be in the studio on the Monocle Daily. You're listening here to Monocle 24. That was Midori House. Thanks for tuning in.